The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Once upon a time, there was a radio show called The Eric Metaxas Show.
It had an announcer named Todd, who was the handsomest announcer in the land. Eric was bitterly jealous of Todd's good looks.
But there was nothing he could do.
He just had to accept that cruel fate had made him as ugly as a toad.
Here's Toadface himself, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks, welcome to The Eric Metaxas Show. As you know, it's Miracle Monday. Albin, Chris.
Yes.
Welcome.
Hello.
To the new week.
Yes.
And happy Independence Day since...
I'm still saluting. I'm still saluting.
I got to tell you, hour one today, there are many people maybe listening right now. They didn't hear hour one. You want to hear a miracle story? You want to hear a Miracle Monday story? I interview a Palm Beach cardiologist who prayed for a dead man and the man came back to life. It's a true story. He wrote about it in a book. This is a very, you know, top-notch cardiologist. He's not just some guy. What a story. Chauncey Crandall is the doctor.
Yeah. He's not just some guy doing cardiology.
Some low-life cardiologist. This is a real big-deal cardiologist. He's not an amateur cardiologist. Let's be clear about that.
He didn't learn from the back of a matchbook. Right.
So, guys, we've got John Zmirak coming up. So we're going to be talking news with Zmirak any second. But before that, we should really talk about the 4th of July. I mean, to me, it's become the kind of a thing that I celebrate for at least a week. I feel that much patriotism at this point. There's so much going on in this country. Did you guys see the president's speech in front of Mount Rushmore?
No, I did not. I did celebrate my independence, shall I say, rather than my dependence on the government, my independence and my privilege, my American privilege. That is,
I saw it. Tiffany and I watched it. It was impressive.
Can you imagine a backdrop like that? Like, it's just mind blowing that it's been 10 years since any president has done that. And I guess that would have been Obama, right? So it's kind of funny now suddenly it's a sign of white privilege. Listen, we've all got to be voices of sanity at a time like this, because most people realize that the left has just gone crazy, anti-American, culturally Marxist. And anyone who goes along with it, I mean, honestly, you become part of the problem. The idea that some people, I'll give you an example. I put out a tweet about Mount Rushmore. I put out two tweets about Mount Rushmore. So if you follow me on Gab, Parley.com or Twitter and on Facebook too, but I put some stuff out. Evidently, Sioux leaders, whatever that means, said that they would like Mount Rushmore to be removed. And I just thought, how do you not respond with a joke? I mean, like, really? Like, it's this glorious sculpture that took innumerable effort. I actually am friends with someone whose dad worked on Mount Rushmore. And we had him on this program, Richard Kane. It's just an American treasure, a national treasure. And, you know, suddenly today, everybody is acting like, well, it's normal to tear down statues and, I just thought this is, if you want clarity on where we are as a country, most people, of course, love Mount Rushmore and see it as a gorgeous monument, as a treasure, as a great work of art, amazing work of art, engineering. And then there are other people that are kind of like, yeah, maybe we should blow it up like the Taliban blew up those Buddhist statues. Maybe destroy it. Let's tear it down. I don't know how you don't make fun of that, but I put out a tweet because I've been doing a lot of reading on atheism and on blind Darwinism. You know, I put out a silly tweet saying that Richard Dawkins, he's the famous Oxford atheist, that he said that Mount Rushmore was a result of natural forces working over time, random forces of wind and erosion working over time, and that it only has the appearance of intelligent design, but in fact, it's simply a product of nature. And of course, that's a stupid joke, but I don't know how you just don't joke around this kind of stuff. Most Americans I know, they just shrug or they laugh or they roll their eyes, but we're living through loony times. So last week I talked to David Barton about how people have desecrated a monument in Boston to the division of black soldiers in the Civil War. These are heroes. These are black heroes in American history. That was desecrated. So we're living through this, and I think we need some sense of humor about it at the same time that we speak against it. So when I read the president's speech in front of Mount Rushmore, what a speech. I mean, what a beautiful, beautiful speech. I posted it all over my social media. I hope people will read it because it's just wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. And then people will say, well, he's dividing the country. He's saying all these patriotic things that's dividing the country.
Yeah, exactly. Patriotism is evil. Evil, I tell you. So
well,
anyway,
it's not a surprise when, you know, you have math proficiency issues with you know, young people and students all across the country. And there's very much a history proficiency issue where it's just
the only thing we had Richard Dreyfuss on.
Yeah.
Right. Right. It's not, but it's not their fault because they're being taught nothing. They're not being taught our history. And this is yet another chance for me to plug my book, If You Can Keep It. I mean, honestly, I've gotten to a point where I can't apologize for pushing my book, If You Can Keep It, because why did I write it? I wrote it for such a time as this. Yeah. We must know our history. We must know that we must know our history, right? Yeah. In other words, it's one thing to know your history, and it's another thing to know that if you don't know your history, and if you don't teach the basics of American history and of what freedom is and what self-government is, if you don't know that, and if you don't pass that along, you become part of the problem.
Yeah.
And when I realized what I didn't know, that's when I wrote the book, If You Can Keep It, because I said to myself, this cannot go on. And when I say this cannot go on, I mean, it cannot go on. If we do not know the basics, as I put in my book, If You Can Keep It, if we don't have a sense of just that much, it's game over. America goes away.
Yeah.
I wish that were hyperbole. I wish I were wrong.
Well,
but I'm not. And it's sad, but we've got to step up.
I was at a picnic on 4th of July, and there's an older gentleman, 85 years old. And he says, I love Eric. I love your show. He said, you and Eric, he said, you're swimming against the tide. And I thought, that's really sad.
Isn't it amazing, Alvin?
We're swimming against the tide. This is America.
Yeah. Well, I want to tell you something. I would argue that most Americans are still swimming against the tide.
Yeah.
If we stop swimming against the tide, it's over. It is over. And I want at least this program to be an encouragement for common sense, for basics, the basics of decency and family and all the things that we can have in common. We're not talking about, we can argue about a lot of stuff, and that's what America is for. We can argue and we can have different opinions and we can celebrate a diversity of opinions. But when people begin to forget the basics, for example, the idea that in a free country, we can disagree, we can talk, we don't shut down thoughts and opinions that we don't like. Once we start to shut down thoughts and opinions that we don't like, the moment that gets serious, which it's beginning to do, we no longer have America. A lot of people don't really understand what I mean by that. It's why I write what I write. It's certainly why I wrote If You Can Keep It, but it's why I have half of the guests that I have on this program, including John Zmirak, who's coming up in a couple of seconds. wait till you hear what Zmirak has to say. I'll give you a hint. It has to do with Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture and the French Revolution. That's right. We'll be right back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Don't go away. Hey, folks, welcome back. It's Miracle Monday, and it is a miracle, I think, that we get John Zmirak on this program roughly once a week. John, it's always a joy to speak with you. My friend, I told the audience already that we're going to speak about the 1812 Overture and the French Revolution. Let's start there, and we can move on to whatever you like.
Sure. One of the funnest parts of any July 4th celebration, apart from communists dismantling historic statues, one of the funnest parts is sort of towards the end, they play the 1812 Overture, and I think they do it because, for a very clear and important reason, it has cannons.
And it has what?
Cannons. You get to fire cannons.
Oh, it has cannons in the overture.
They fire cannons.
Are you serious that, like, in the score for the 1812 Overture,
the
instrument is cannon?
Yes, cannons and church bells, because it was originally performed to celebrate the, I think, 50th anniversary of the defeat of Napoleon by Russia. And it was performed at the Cathedral of Christ the Savior in Moscow with the bells of the churches and cannons outside. And because, I mean, it commemorates the battle outside Moscow. It commemorates Napoleon's defeat by the Tsar's troops. Okay.
What year was that defeat?
1812.
Oh, that's why it's called the 1812 Overture. I have to tell you, I am, you know, most people who are paying attention know that I'm relatively historically ignorant. But when I hear the term 1812 Overture, it never occurs to me that it could be about anything other than the War of 1812. Of course, that's idiotic because I couldn't care less about the American War of 1812. But it just never even occurred to me of what it was. So this was when Napoleon fatally overreached, as Hitler would do more than a century later, and was defeated soundly by a great Russia. Okay, so 50 years later, Tchaikovsky writes this.
And they perform it in the Cathedral of Christ the Savior in Moscow, a cathedral that would later be blown up by Stalin and rebuilt after the end of communism. And it now stands again looking exactly the way it used to when Tchaikovsky's piece premiered. Now, here's what's interesting about the piece. It has nothing to do with America. It celebrates the defeat of a revolution, the French Revolution. And yet we play it to celebrate the 4th of July. In part, that's because it's fun and has cannons and bells. But there's a deeper reason. And that's what I explore in my piece at stream.org, which is called The 2020 Revolution and the 1812 Overture. Because what we're seeing around us, the toppling of statues, the attacks on churches, the canceling of people, the seizure of control of the language, people talking about radical utopian changes and grabbing power by force and uprooting the whole country's history. This is exactly what happened in France in the French Revolution, culminating in 1793, when they murdered King Louis XVI, set up guillotines, killed tens of thousands of political dissidents, butchered priests and nuns, closed every Protestant church in France, converted the Cathedral of Notre Dame into the Temple of Reason and put a prostitute on the altar, and then started a war with every one of their neighbors and drafted the peasants, the Christian religious peasants, to go fight against Christianity invading all their neighbors. And when the peasants didn't want to go, the French revolutionaries started a genocide of the peasants in the Vendée, killing maybe 300,000 people. It was the first modern genocide. That's what they celebrate on Bastille Day.
And wait a minute, John, because I know everything you're saying is true, but
condensed.
I want one thing that you said that was genuinely new to me was that the murder of these 300,000 peasants, you said, was the first
modern genocide.
That is extraordinary, John, because I have not heard that. And just as you said, when the French, you know, at least semi-idiotically celebrate Bastille Day, you kind of have to ask, what are they celebrating?
Yeah.
It really is so sick in a way that they celebrate this without any sense of irony, at least many of them do. And you're telling me that it ends, not quite ends, but sort of ends in this murder of peasants, mass murder of peasants. What point did Napoleon take control? And wouldn't you argue that Napoleon really was not part of what went before?
Napoleon was at some, Napoleon put an end to the civil wars in France by crushing all opposition. He cut a kind of deal with the church where the church was firmly under control of the government, had no freedom at all. But he also launched wars against the whole rest of Europe. And he was marching in the name of the principles of the French Revolution. Every country he went into, he installed a revolutionary government and seized property and redistributed to supporters. So while Napoleon was the dictator who finally rose to the top of the French Revolution, that was inevitable. Somebody had to take control. I mean, Stalin is a continuation of the Russian Revolution, even though he was an authoritarian and there was no revolution going on. There were no more committees. There was no more street demonstrations because it was now a dictatorship. Every revolution ends in a dictatorship. So Castro the revolutionary leads to Castro the dictator. The French Revolution culminated in Napoleon the dictator, marching, trying to conquer the whole of Europe, getting defeated in Russia. Now, here's what I love about the 1812 Overture. You need to find a version of it that's choral, that includes choir, because the choral version is really, it's the authentic one, and you see what it's really about, because it starts off with a chant from the Russian Orthodox liturgy, the Troparion of the Holy Cross. And this is what the peasants sing in Russian, if you have the choral version. The peasants sing, O Lord, save thy people and bless thine inheritance. Grant victory to the true believing Christians over their adversaries. And by the power of thy cross, preserve thy habitation. That is the hymn that starts off the 1812 Overture, gets drowned out by the Marseillaise, the murderous revolutionary song about killing foreigners and killing enemies. Read the lyrics of La Marseillaise sometime. They're brutal. They're all about slaughtering your political opponents in the streets. That drowns out the Orthodox hymn. Then the music swells, the cannons fire, and the end of the 1812 Overture is that Christian Russian hymn reasserting itself, drowning out the Marseillaise. So the 1812 Overture is a beautiful little historical capsule of the victory of Christianity over revolution. What could be more appropriate to celebrate our revolution, July 4th, 1776, which was a Christian political reform enacted by people who were mostly Calvinists or Presbyterians or Calvinist Anglicans, following St. Augustine and trying to limit the power of the government to protect people because each of us has fallen, including the people in the government. And the American founding was profoundly Christian in the same sense that the French Revolution was profoundly pagan. And there's a great book by Mark David Hall, Did America Have a Christian Founding? And I highly recommend it. It proves just how thoroughgoing the Christian roots, the Augustinian roots of the American founding were. It's a great companion book to your own book, if you can keep it, and the great book, America on Trial by Robert Reilly. As the left tries to root up and destroy the Liberty Tree, it's time for us to water the roots and manure it and trim it and protect it.
John, I think that the last few minutes with you, a lot of people are thinking to themselves, this exactly is why I listen to the Eric Metaxas Show, because what I and my audience have just heard from you is absolutely vital. It's beautiful to understand culture and ideas and, you know, for people now to understand the deeper meaning behind the 1812 Overture by Tchaikovsky and why we play it every year. Honestly, that is just so rich and so beautiful. So let me just say on behalf of my audience, thank you so much. That's really absolutely extraordinary. I hope that I say this as often as possible, that I hope my audience understands that it's their duty to share these things. So we will post this on YouTube. I will put it on Twitter and on Facebook, and we put your articles on there as well. And I simply hope that my audience who are on social media will share these things, because if we don't share these vital ideas, it goes away. And so I had to say that, John, thank you. That is extraordinary.
They're not teaching this in school. They're not teaching this in colleges. So we have to spread it through a kind of samizdat, underground literature, the way in Soviet Russia, Alexander Solzhenitsyn couldn't distribute his manuscript because the government owned all the Xerox machines. So people who wanted a Solzhenitsyn book had to retype it. They would take a Solzhenitsyn manuscript and they would retype it, and then you had another copy. That's how much they loved his books. That's how hard they worked to transmit ideas of freedom in an atmosphere of tyranny. We are entering an atmosphere of tyranny now. We have to do the work.
And that's a way of shaming people into, hey, if they could retype a manuscript, you couldn't retweet it? What is wrong with you? No, seriously, we do need to spread these ideas. And I always say to my audience, and I say it again now, we need your help. We'll be right back with John Zmierak. Don't go away.
The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump wants to meet you. This will be the first opportunity he's had to meet with American patriots like you since our country started reopening. His team will cover the flight and hotel and give you VIP access for yourself and a guest. He'll even take a picture with you. All you have to do is text VIP to 88022 today for your chance to meet President Trump. Again, that's VIP to 88022 for your chance to win and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for 4 more years.
Hi, folks. Trying times. Just know they won't last. Trying times can be hard on our digestive tract. So why not try Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com? Life Change Tea is an herbal blend of tea that helps the digestive tract and the colon cleanse from intruders. For years, people have experienced the benefits from Life Change Tea. And so can you. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. And for those of you that want to go a step further, we have non-GMO organic supplements. If you're listening to Eric, you're informed and educated. So how about free shipping? Just go to the checkout, find the coupon code, enter Eric, E-R-I-C, hit apply, and receive free shipping. Again, Eric, in the coupon code, hit apply, free shipping. These historic times will pass. The yuck in your gut will pass also with GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com.
Hey, folks, I'm talking to John Zmierak. John, you've written so many articles for stream.org. Tell us the one, Noah Red-Pilling the Normies, or what was it? Go ahead.
Why Noah couldn't red-pill the normies.
Okay, now listen, not everybody... It's like, you know, hip and up on references to the Wachowski films and stuff. So please help my audience understand what the heck you're talking about.
Noah is a figure in a piece of religious literature of the Jews. No, I'm kidding. No, we all know who Noah is. Red Pill, that's from The Matrix. They're living in this fantasy world of illusion and everything is hunky-dory. Everything is fine. It's always 2001. Everybody's working at a startup internet company. But in fact, they are all trapped. They're all prisoners. They're all bodies in tanks whose minds are being flooded with false images, this imaginary world of the Matrix. And in order to get out of it, you're offered the chance. You can take a red pill and then you'll see the world as it really is, which is horrible. You know, your body's in a tank being pumped electric messages by this all-powerful computer system. Or you can take the blue pill and forget about it. So it's if you're in the Matrix and you try to explain to someone, you know, in fact, terrible things are happening behind the scenes, you sound like a paranoid lunatic. Waking people up to genuine, real conspiracies and genuine, real dangers that people don't want to see, the internet slang for that is red-pilling. Okay? Why Noah couldn't red-pill the people around him? I mean, Noah's building an ark. And people, I mean, thinking of the famous Bill Cosby routine. Noah's building an ark, and his neighbors are like, well, what are you doing? Well, the Lord God, who you've never seen, he's invisible, but he's real. He's angry at us because of your sins, so he's going to flood the entire world. And I'm building this boat for me and my family and two of every kind of animal, and we're going to float away to safety. Right. Okay, sure. You try to explain that to your neighbors, but in fact, it was real. Why couldn't Noah convince them? Because what he was saying was so shocking, because the reality he was pointing to was so appalling, nobody wants to believe it. You sound like a maniac. And I'm using this metaphor to explain how the left in America gets away with murder, figuratively and literally, okay? So there are two steps in how the left gets away with these things. First, when they say they want some kind of mild reform, like we want women to be able to choose to terminate their pregnancies in the first trimester if they've been raped and would die if they gave birth to a handicapped child who otherwise wouldn't live outside the womb anyway. I mean, they make up these terrible worst case scenarios, these sob stories that might not even be real. Or we don't want mobs of people killing gay people in the streets. Well, obviously not. Okay, good. We don't want cops murdering black people in the streets. No, we do not. So, but then the left, when the time comes to make these reforms, they make outrageous, absurd, insane demands. Abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy and after. Infanticide is to be legal, according to Cuomo and Governor Northam. It's not just you don't beat up gay people or put them in jail. No, we're, thanks to the Supreme Court decision of Bostock 2 weeks ago, every Christian-owned company might be forced to do sensitivity training for all their employees to respect gay ideology. If they don't, they might be subject to crippling class action lawsuits. And of course, Black Lives Matter. They want to defund the police and turn whole neighborhoods over to militias of crackpot people and rappers and gangsters and communist organizers.
Essentially, what they're saying, it becomes funny because they claim that they want to defund the police and then give those funds to elders. In other words, elders, you picture the guy, you know, who was it with the tambourine in Washington, D.C., with Nick Sandman or whatever, you know, elders. Wise, woke
maybe elders.
Maybe
the elders of Zion, they mean.
And then they just make it sound like a street fair. OK,
and of course, it's really a vicious conspiracy theory, like vicious anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. It's an ideology of ethnic resentment and hatred. But again, it starts off with a sad story, or maybe a real sad story. George Floyd's story is real and sad. What's not real is systemic racism. That is not real. What's not real is the claim that America's founding was racist. So we should tear down Columbus, George Washington, and my favorite, I shouldn't laugh, they tore down Frederick Douglass over the weekend.
Oh, no.
Black abolition.
John,
now, why did they do that? Why did they do that? Because he was a patriot. He was not a communist.
Right.
He didn't think the American founding was evil. So by the standards of Black Lives Matter, they've gone so far left that Frederick Douglass is up there with Nathan Bedford Forrest, the slave trader. They're all equal. Okay, that's what Black Lives Matter means. Everything goes into the shredder. So if I try to explain that to my nice, normal sister who lives on Long Island, and I tell her all these terrible things, and I show her the links between the Democratic Party and the Reverend Jim Jones and the slaughter in Jonestown. I talk about Planned Parenthood selling baby parts for profit in styrofoam, like Kentucky Fried Chicken sells chicken parts. If you and I try to talk to these about these horrendous things to nice, normal people, they think we're crazy. Even
they think,
if we present
they think we're Noah. Warning of an impending deluge.
Right.
It obviously sounds absolutely insane. It'll never happen, except here's the problem. Noah was right. When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with John Zmierich. I know you wouldn't go away,
so don't. Show, second balcony, was the place we'd meet. Second seat, gold Dutch treat. You were sweet, dark as shame, darling, dark as shame.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere.
Hey, folks, welcome back. I'm talking to John Zmirak. John, we're talking about an article you wrote at stream.org. Let's keep going.
Called Why Noah Couldn't Red Pill the Normies.
Okay, red pill is a verb.
Right, from the Matrix. And take the red pill so you can see what's really going on. A right. Normie is just a slang term for people who keep their eyes straight ahead of them, don't think about the broader issue. They're just too busy with their everyday lives. And if you say anything that sounds crazy, if you point out what's actually happening, the actual insanity that's happening around them, their psychological defense mechanism is to say you're crazy. They don't want to hear about Planned Parenthood selling styrofoam containers full of unborn baby eyes to labs and making thousands of dollars doing that, and the federal government continuing to fund them because of Republican cowards on Capitol Hill who wouldn't defund them even when we controlled both houses of Congress and the White House for two whole years.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear that. If you're that crazy person who talks about the baby eyes and the styrofoam, you're nuts. You're one of those conspiracy theorists.
Right.
And
right.
Then you present them with the proof. And then they don't dismiss you. They hate you. Because you are forcing them to think about ugly, unpleasant things. Get that stinky diaper out of my face. I'm eating. That is the problem you and I have. We're waving around baby diapers in like Delmonico's Steakhouse, and we're getting escorted to the door. Understand?
Well, look, what you're saying, I mean, I have to come clean. The other day when I interviewed Newt Gingrich, I was talking about how the right, how conservatives or at least Republicans were rah, rah, rah for trading with China and so on and so forth. Yeah. And he said on this program, I was one of them. I was wrong. And
God bless him.
Right. I feel the same way when you're talking about this. When we were at Yale together, I was one of those normies who would look at somebody like you and just say, oh, that's, you know, he's one of those crazy conservative Christian types or whatever. And by the grace of God, Jesus red pilled me in the summer of 1988, and I began to see the truth. And sometimes it's not fun to see the truth, but I'll tell you, folks, it's better to see the truth than to be in this dream state of denial. And again, it's why we do this program, to let you know you're not alone. There are tons of people who see this. And if we don't stand up and make our voices heard, we are part of the problem. So, John, you're at the head of the red pilling brigade, because you're speaking a lot of things that nobody else is speaking about. So I
like your expression. You were red pilled by the blood of Jesus.
I was absolutely.
That's the ultimate red pill.
By Jesus, but yes, by the blood of Jesus.
Red pill that fell from the cross and splashed on you.
That's absolutely right. And you know what? Until you put yourself at the foot of the cross, It won't happen. At least for me, it didn't happen. So
let's talk about what's really happening. Okay. If you or I had said 4 years ago, they're going to want to get rid of Mount Rushmore, they're going to be tearing down George Washington and Christopher Columbus, people would have said, you're crazy. But that's exactly what's happening now. There are all these pictures of Obama and Hillary Clinton at Mount Rushmore when it was politically convenient for them to seem all patriotic. Now, the Democratic National Committee in a tweet, talked about Trump going to Mount Rushmore as glorifying white supremacy in a region once sacred to tribal communities.
When you say the before, but sometimes you say stuff and I just got to say, wait a minute, because I didn't know this. You're
this is telling the tweet from the DNC.
That the Democratic National Committee, not
let me read you the whole tweet.
AOC, but the Democratic National Committee, they're the ones that said this. So if you want to,
I'll read it again. This is a tweet they have since deleted, but somebody took a screenshot. Trump. It's a picture of Mount Rushmore. Trump has disrespected Native communities time and again, He's attempted to limit their voting rights and block critical pandemic relief. Now he's holding a rally glorifying white supremacy at Mount Rushmore, a region once sacred to tribal communities. Do you know another region once sacred to tribal communities? Every square inch of the United States, including where the Democrats live. CNN reports on Mount Rushmore, wrested away from Indians. Guess what? CNN headquarters stands on land wrested away from Native Americans. Are they giving it back? It's madness. But this is what I said 4 years ago. And I said, don't take down Confederate statues. Take down nothing. Don't tear down Margaret Sanger. Don't tear down Lenin's statue in Portland. Tear down nothing. This generation is drunk. Take away its car keys. Maybe in 5 or 10 years, when our national blood alcohol goes down below 0.20, we might be able to have a talk about whether some statues should go here or there, maybe be moved to museums. I'm against removing anything, because if you're going to tear down Robert E. Lee, then you're going to say, well, Washington was a slave owner. Jefferson was a slave owner. And come to think of it, America stole this land from the Indians. Everything on earth has been stolen from somebody else at some point, except maybe the Basque region of Spain. So maybe only the Basques in Spain have the right to have any national monuments, because they never took the land from anyone. They've been there since the Stone Age. But everybody else has to tear down all their statues. And I guess we can replace them all with statues of maybe Al Sharpton or Tawana Brawley or Jesse Smollett. I mean, you know, our modern heroes.
You know, the guy's name is Jesse, and I think we can leave it at that.
That's right.
I think it's time. It's high time that the British Museum gave the Elgin marbles back to the Ottoman Empire.
Yes.
They deserve to have that back. Okay.
Yeah.
No, honestly, John, when we talk about this kind of thing, the main point that I want people to understand, to tell your friends, is like, look, if this were 1980 and you want to vote for a Democrat, we can have a conversation. Today, the Democratic National Committee and all of the mandarins of power in the Democratic establishment are unwilling. They are unwilling to stand against the madness that says, tear down Mount Rushmore, tear down everything. And because they're unwilling to do that, people in America have an obligation, as you said before, to take the red pill, to see the truth. And even if you despise Donald Trump for many good reasons that you might have, nonetheless, the choice is clear. The Democrats refuse to do what Bill Clinton was willing to do. And when he had his sister soldier moment and say, no, I'm not going along with that craziness, they refuse to do it. I just want to say that we need to wake up and we're going to go to a break. But folks, this is happening. And if you don't take a stand somehow, you become part of this problem. So we'll be right back with John Smirak. I'm back with John Smirak. John, you just brought something up. I was aware of this on social media over this weekend. This is so insane. Please tell my audience about what you want to talk about.
I got a piece at stream.org. Harvard's Joan of Arc, Clara Janover, burns herself at the stake. Should we bring s'mores?
Okay. Now, you're always too clever by half, so I just want to explain to the audience. We're talking about a woman who graduated from Harvard, correct?
Yeah.
And she had a job, some plum job at Deloitte and Touche, you know, these consultants or whatever they are, a big job. So she went on social media being the woke Ivy League lefty that she is. This young woman goes on social media and says what?
Okay, she puts on a kind of a fake black voice, like using like ghetto language.
Okay, so this woman is like Asian.
She's half Asian, Harvard graduate, going to work in an accounting firm. So she starts talking like a rapper. And she's talking about anyone who says all lives matter and won't just repeat the mantra, black lives matter, black lives matter. Anyone who says, well, I think all lives matter. She said, I'm going to stab you. And as you bleed out and you bleed to death, I'm going to show you the paper cut on my finger and say, my paper cut matters too. So this death threat she issued against anyone.
Did she use the word amo?
Yeah, I'ma stab you.
I'ma stab you?
Yeah, she puts on.
When somebody says, I'ma stab you, that's cultural appropriation.
Yes, it is.
It's the equivalent of blackface. We want to be clear. We stand on this program against that, don't we? Thank you very much.
Absolutely. I don't think anybody but Indians should use a zero. Or Arabic numerals at all, which are really Hindu. We should all be using Roman numerals.
Anyone who says amo on this show, I'm going to kick your butt.
Unless they're actually a rapper. If you get a real rapper, if you get Kanye
on here,
Kanye's allowed to say.
Not that much time. So she goes on.
Okay, so she goes on. She issues a death threat.
Stab people.
She issues what's essentially a death threat. And then there's pushback. People write nasty things to her. And she goes on social media again and taunts them and blames Donald Trump. And then she gets notified that Deloitte is not hiring her. And then she goes on social media and she sobs hysterically on her bed and throws a tantrum about how she lost her job for using her free speech. Then she sets up a GoFundMe, raises $10,000 so far, and now we find out she never even had a job at Deloitte. She had a 2-week unpaid internship. So she just made 10 grand and made herself a leftist celebrity over losing an unpaid internship for issuing a death threat to half of America. God bless America. I love these plates.
Honestly, John, this the idea that what looks like a lovely young woman would go on social media and say that she would stab people and then would go on social media and weep publicly. You kind of wonder what's up with this generation that they would really become naked in front of strangers, that they would pour their emotions out, say ridiculous things, weep and go on like this. I find that itself fascinating. You think that just
gets rewarded, Eric, it gets rewarded. Remember when the two Christakis professors at Yale, they told people lighten up a little bit about Halloween costumes.
Yeah.
You had all these Yale students throwing tantrums in front of cameras. And it worked. It got tenured professors run off the campus of an Ivy League school. So if you reward hysterical tantrums, you're going to get more.
Isn't that wonderful? We wanted to end on an upbeat note. John, it's always wonderful to have you. People need to find you. They need to go to stream.org. You've written all these articles. I think these articles should be printed out and handed out for homeschoolers in high school. Right. This is important stuff. My friend, thank you so much. Folks, thank you for listening. Remember, we do this every day and we need your help. Thank you.